always wanted homes that were nice. I mean, at least $1 million homes, maybe not multi-million because, you know, now we're talking a lot of security, but at least maybe $500,000 to $1 million homes, nice affluent neighborhoods. I would always try to find a home that was in a cul-de-sac so I wouldn't get lost in there, or a home that backed up to a street, not like a main street, but just maybe like a two-way street that was right outside the neighborhood, because sometimes I would have to jump a fence if I had to get out of there quickly. My car was on the other side and then I'm gone. Rich people always want to advertise all of their security. This home is under surveillance. ADT alarm system stickers, the picket in the front of the yard, like they just want you to know. But for me, that was a good thing because what you're telling me is you have things to protect, and now I know there's an alarm system, so I'm going to work around it.
What is up, guys, and welcome back to the Locked In with Ian Bick podcast. Hope everyone had a wonderful holiday weekend, and I'm so excited to jump into today's episode with Jennifer Gomez. She is a former cat burglar, and she is on the show today to share how she used to break into houses, stealing hundreds of thousands of dollars from individuals. Her story is absolutely insane. She's built a huge following on social media platforms like TikTok, and not only did she get sentenced to prison, but she ended up getting pregnant and having a child while she was in prison. Very excited to share this episode with you guys today. And also, I need to give a big thank you to Factor for sponsoring today's episode. Do you want to get chef-prepared meals on the table in just 2 minutes? Guess what? You're in luck. If you head over to factormeals.com/lockedin50 and use code LOCKEDIN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box after that. I'd like to thank Factor for their continued support for the Locked In with Ian Bick podcast. Also, guys, super exciting news. We just dropped the new line of merch. It's actually really cool looking. And if you use code LOCKEDIN at checkout, you could get 20% off. Thank you guys, the listeners, the viewers who week after week support the show and listen to every episode. And thank you to everyone that leaves a comment on YouTube and also DMs me on Instagram with your feedback for the show, who you'd like to see on, and also sends me an email. I try to respond to as many as possible, and I'll always continue to do so. Now sit back, relax, and get ready to lock in with Jennifer Gomez. Jen, welcome to Locked In. Absolute pleasure having you.
Thank you.
When I saw your page, I was like, how could we not, your TikTok, how could we not have you on the show? Because you're like the real life Catwoman. Like, literally.
Thank you. Yeah. It's not what I started out to be. That's not what I aspired to be. But yeah, that's kind of how it ended up. So,
Who is the actress that played her? Anne Hathaway, right?
I think she did one, but no.
The Dark Knight.
Jennifer Garner did one too.
Okay, I don't think I saw that one.
Maybe you're a little too young.
Thank you. Already shooting at me for the age.
Yes, that's a good thing. It's a compliment.
I get shot at all the time when a woman comes on that's older than me.
Face.
I know, it's rough. The men don't treat me like that. It's always okay. The woman.
I think we're jealous, low-key jealous.
Of the baby face?
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I got something going for me.
You do.
I wonder how I'm going to look at 40.
I have a feeling it's going to be good.
Me?
Yeah, I have a feeling it's going to be good.
I think I'm going to have the same face because I haven't aged.
I think you're going to have the same exact face.
My face has not aged at all.
No, I think you're literally going to have the same exact face. I'm not even kidding.
Yeah, it's weird.
Well, your girlfriend or wife will be really happy. Actually, I don't know. She might be pissed off because
I have a baby face?
Yeah.
I think
she's going to age and you're not.
Yeah, but it's like, it's like a charm, you know, and then you mix in the tats and you got the face and this and that and you're good to go.
I haven't seen the tattoos in person, so I think that might be why I'm not grasping that part yet.
That brings out the felon part.
Right. I don't know. That might do something. We got to see those afterwards.
Okay.
Yeah, we got to get to those.
But yeah, I saw your page, stumbled across it randomly. You popped up on my For You page, and I almost didn't message you, email you, because no offense to some of the female creators out there, but they are the most unresponsive people ever. Like, you can't get a hold of them. Some of the bigger ones, yeah.
I have heard
that. I shot you an email. You got right back to me. We hopped on a call, and then you told me all the cool projects you've been doing. And I was like, awesome. Yeah. We got to have you on the show. And now here we are a couple months later.
Yeah. If you do not try to take advantage of all the opportunities and you're not prepared, then you're not going to make it anywhere. So I try to respond. But I checked you out before I responded, and I saw that, I don't know, everything you do just looks like there's a lot of love and effort and just genuine commitment behind it. It's not something you just throw out there to make a couple dollars or, you know, get your name out there. It seems like you really put a lot into it. So I was like, this is good. This is good, not just, you know, for exposure reasons, but like this is somebody that I would want to work with. So
that's my passion. Thank you.
You can tell. It comes across.
It's my passion. This is what I do. This is my life. Like I'm doing it 24/7. Like I'm never not doing this. And then I have clients that I edit stuff for too.
Yeah, that's
so
what's up.
It's a grind, you know? You know how it is to stand out.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah,
it is.
But you put a lot of effort into your videos.
Yeah.
Plug in your TikTok, you know, and your social media real quick. So,
yeah.
Because viewers love to find out who the people that we're interviewing.
Yeah, cool. Okay. So my TikTok is at Jen Gomez, JenGomez Gomez. And I have another TikTok as well. It's at Jen Gomez 2.0. It's just going to be a little bit different than my first, but at Jen Gomez is probably where they'll want to go. And I'm trying to get out there with my YouTube and do things. I was actually, my YouTube, the story behind that was I was going to tell the stories of the women I was incarcerated with because I was at Lowell Correctional where there's death row, it's maximum security, it's the biggest female prison in the U.S. of A. So it's not just Florida, it's just the biggest female prison in the whole United States. And so I was there with a lot of like notorious people, all the ones you see on Snapped and 48 Hours and all those things, killer couples. So I tell a lot of stories about those women and what are they really like. And so if you want to check that out, my YouTube is also at Jen Gomez. So just add Jen Gomez everywhere and you will find me.
You got the burner account for the TikTok.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Always got to stay strapped and ready.
Yes, yes.
So where are you from? Where did you grow up?
So I actually grew up in Jacksonville, Florida, but we came from Dominican Republic. I came here, I was about 10. Not here, but I came to Jacksonville when I was about 10, and I've been there ever since. I'm a Florida girl.
And only child, multiple siblings?
No, I'm the youngest of seven. I have three brothers and three sisters. I had a really good upbringing, actually. Like, everyone in my family is very just well-to-do, put together, walk the straight and narrow. My mom's a neurologist. My dad's a psychiatrist. I went to private schools. I just had a really good, nice life and was afforded a lot of good opportunities and kind of just pissed it all away.
If we had one of your close friends here with us today from childhood, how would they describe you back then?
They would say that I always liked exciting things, that I was always the loud one, the social one, the one that wanted to do something wild, what was wild to that circle, that group, you know, that demographic. Like, I just always wanted something exciting. And so I was always just very hyper, very talkative, very funny, very animated. I was nice, but I wasn't, people couldn't really get too deep with me. It was all just kind of shallow, superficial. I kind of just rode this wave of this group of people that I was growing up with, but I kind of always felt a little different.
Now, I know you said that you feel like you had everything in life growing up and whatnot, but looking back on it now that you're older, wiser, you have a child of yourself, do you feel like there was anything internally missing back then?
I feel like I definitely feel like there was something internally missing. I feel like there was... You know, I'm the youngest of seven, but the closest sibling to me is 9 years older. And my mom had me when she was almost 40. So everybody was there was a lot of age difference between myself and everybody in my household. And so there was a lot of people physically present, but I kind of felt like I was by myself. And so as to where they all had each other and kind of had a path and an example and a model to... Don't get me. they all had like a mold, you know, a model, something to look up to, something to kind of aspire. And I just kind of was like growing up in a time where, you know, hip hop was becoming very popular and like, you know, the Sopranos were on just different things. And so I didn't have anyone to really, I didn't have a sounding board. I didn't have anyone to bounce anything off of. So I was just kind of like out there by myself. I had a lot of material things and a lot of opportunities, but I was kind of alone. And so, but aside from that, honestly, and no, I mean, my parents were both there. They loved me. I cannot sit and say at any point in time that I was like traumatized or I went through this horrible thing that made me do, like, no, I just wanted to have fun.
Which parent were you closer to?
My mom.
Your mom?
Yeah.
Mom's girl?
Yeah, for sure.
You know, it's interesting that you, I think it's important that you give that perspective of that everything was, for the most part, normal.
Yeah.
Because it applies to more people regularly that you ended up in prison for 10 years coming from a normal thing. Like, it could happen to anyone.
Well, that's, it's funny you say that because that is part of the reason I started telling my story. Because when people would see me or meet me somewhere, even at my son's school, like he goes to a private Catholic school, the mom's there, they see me, they don't know anything about me. When someone does find out, they're generally like, their response is always, what? Like, oh my gosh, you don't look like the type. You don't, like, just, you don't, I mean, same thing you get, you know, you just don't look like it. And I'm always just baffled because I'm like, what does it look like? Because when I was in prison, I saw a lot of people that looked like me. And more often than not, they look like me than, you know, in the female prison. It's just somebody that made sometimes just one bad decision and it snowballed, or one night they got in a car and made one stupid move and now they're in prison. I mean, there's just so many people that, regardless of where you come from, I mean, addiction, crime, stupidity, it does not discriminate. You can be rich, you can be smart, you can be whatever. It doesn't discriminate. You can end up in prison, and a lot of people do not know, they don't see that. So I was like, you know, I can really be like a living example that you can end up in a bad place coming from a good place and then still bounce back at the end, and it can come full circle and you can be all right.
You know, so the individuals you're describing, like the Piper Kermans from Orange is the New Black, and individuals like yourself, what I've found is those are the people that are most embarrassed by sharing their story, that don't like revealing it.
Yeah.
So it helps when they see like someone like me. Like, I'm the type of person that was so embarrassed when I got out of prison. And I'm sure, you feel for that too.
Yep.
So by sharing your story on social media, I think it kind of changes the world in a way. Because then if a mom that went to prison for something like, say, a DUI or something, that one bad mistake that we're talking about, who came from a perfectly normal family, if she can get up and talk about it openly and create something awesome from it, you know, like guys and viewers idolize you on TikTok. Like, they like your stories.
Yeah.
They comment and stuff because it's fascinating.
No, that's that's a really good point. And you said that, you know, people like me, I was super embarrassed. If you actually go back to my TikTok, I started out with makeup and trying to do all that. But then eventually I started telling prison stories, like prison rules, prison etiquette, prison this, prison that. But I never would say why I went to prison. And people would constantly ask, like, why did you go? What happened? What happened? You won't say why you went. And I could not bring myself to say I was a burglar because it just felt like I was just so ashamed. Like, how did I end up there? And it was just too much. There was too much backstory to just get it out there. So, but anyways, I say that to say this. In November, this past November, it's a few months ago, is the first time I said, I went to prison for 10 years, and it's probably one of the videos you saw, and I was a cat burglar. And that is what made my page go crazy. And more often than not, the comments were like, wow, good for you. Like, good for turning it around. That's awesome. Versus, like, I mean, there's still people who are like, you should get life. You should be in prison forever.
Most people are losers. Like, they're trolls. Yeah. They got nothing going on, you know?
So I'm just hitting the couch. Just,
if people hate on another person that's doing well with something that was bad,
I know.
Screw them.
Like, those are the people that are like, you know, once a criminal, always a criminal. You guys never change. And then when you do change, they're like, oh, you should have just stayed in there forever. So, you know, you can't please everyone. But, when I started telling my story, that's when really everything kind of opened up. And I was like, wow, they do want to know this. They're not looking at me crazy. And I was more embarrassed because a lot of women in prison, yes, they were like me. They, you know, maybe just made one bad decision. They were a college student, whatever. But even so, the majority of them still had something in their past that you could attribute to why they made that decision, you know, some kind of crutch, something like abuse, an assault, you know, a broken home, foster care, something. And I didn't have any of that. So I was like, yeah, it was really hard to admit that you're just a complete buck up and for absolutely no reason.
Did you have any issues with substances at all?
I did. So I kind of have to tell you about the Russian mafia guy
Did you graduate high school?
I did. I graduated high school.
And that was all normal?
And that was all normal and fine. I actually, so I'll start right there. I was at a party when I was 17 and I met this guy. hold on. Let me. My best friend was a Russian girl, okay? And Russians in Jacksonville, they tend to, like, really stick together. They all know each other. I mean, just like, a lot of anybody, whatever. Okay, so my best friend, Katie, was Russian. And one night, we were at a party. I was 17. She was 17. And there was a lot of people from the school there, from our high school. But there was also a lot of Russians. So there's, like, a very prevalent Russian community in Jacksonville. And as we were leaving the party that night, Katie and I were walking out. And as we were walking out, I see this guy on this big S500 Mercedes. And he's just, like, leaned up against it. And he's, like, tall. And he's got dark hair. And he's just got a nice physique. And I'm just like, who is that? I've never seen him. Like, he doesn't go to our high school. He looks a little bit older than us, too. So anyways, my best friend Katie said, don't, like, stay away. Don't do that. Don't go there because he is bad news. Like, we all know him in the Russian community. He just came to this country a couple years ago. He is bad news. His family's bad news. So I was really intrigued. I wanted to know who he was. As I left the party, he ended up swerving in front of me and cutting me off. He hadn't said anything to me as I was walking to my car, but he, like, cut me off and he was like, hey, where are you going? And I was like, home. And he was like, you want to go hang out for a little while? And I was like, sure. So I went and hung out with him. And then from there, we started dating. Okay. So the Russian and I, we dated, we talked on the phone. We didn't actually, like, nothing real big happened. I was in high school. He was 4 years older than me. I ended up, after about a month, losing contact with him. He was completely gone. Like, I didn't know where he went. He wasn't answering the phone. Nobody knew anything about him. Nobody could tell me shit. I was pissed. I was like, damn, did this guy have, like, a wife or something in Russia? Like, you know, what happened to him? I really liked him. Anyways, he disappeared. Time goes on. He ends up coming back to the country when I'm 22, 23. He ends up finding me. And when he finds me, we, like, rekindle. We fall in love, all this great stuff. He had a mortgage company. He had a lot of money. He had nice cars. He had a nice home. I'm a little older now. He's still 4 years older than me, so he's older. And he just had it going on, man. He was just very successful. So I assumed the mortgage company was what, you know, he had a mortgage company, he had an audio shop, and he had a, like, after hours pool hall club thing. So I assumed he was rich from all of that, or you know, well off, let's say. And that was it. I didn't think anything of it. I ended up starting to really hang out at the After Hours Club. One night I tried cocaine. I did not like it at all. I didn't like how I felt. I'm naturally, like, hyper. I talk a lot as it is. And so I did not like how I was feeling. I was, like, thinking that there was, like, the feds were on the roof. I didn't even know anything about the feds. I was, like, trying to peep through windows. It was really creepy. So I was like, I don't want to feel like this. I want to feel like myself. So somebody ended up giving me an Oxy, and that started this addiction to Oxys and Roxys. And then it just became Roxys, but it started this addiction to Roxys. I didn't ever try anything else. I really wasn't ever into drugs like that. But the pain pills, I liked them. I had a thing for them. So that started the addiction. I'm going to spare you all the details of the Russian, but it was crazy. He actually ended up being into a lot more than I knew. He was into, like, money laundering overseas. He was into bringing cocaine and heroin from New York to Florida. His mortgage company was a front. It was just a shell company. There was nothing going on. Like, you'd walk in and there was, like, two chairs, a phone, a computer, and nobody. And one time I asked him, I was like, why is nobody ever at your office? Like, why you own this company? Why is there nobody there ever? And he's like, oh, they're always out surveying properties. They're buying, you know, homes that have been foreclosed on. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's what they do, whatever. Okay. So he ends up getting shot one day. He calls me. I'm at the house. We live together now. I have nice things. I'm very happy. Life is lavish. Life is good. I was in college, by the way, when I met up with him again, when he found me. And I dropped out. After I got my A, I dropped out. And I didn't pursue anything else because I was in my third year, and when he came back and he was like, I was all into him. He was like, I can take care of you. You don't have to do anything. So I didn't. I left. I left school alone, and I was just basically home all the time and just partying. I was partying a lot. And he called me one day when I was at the house, and he was like, baby, I've been shot. That's how he talked. He was like, baby, I've been shot. And I was like, what? You've been shot? What do you mean you've been shot? Because this doesn't sound real. I don't even know anybody that's been shot. I'm like, Well, because now I'm worried and I'm scared. I'm like, where are you at? And he's like, I'm on San Jose Boulevard. I'm like, well, pull over at the nearest gas station. I'm coming to you. So I get in my car. I go to him. He was shot right here in the arm. So as I get in the car, I go to his car. I park. I see his car. I go into his car. He's over in the passenger seat now. He's like slumped over. He's holding his arm. He's bleeding a lot, but he's okay. I can tell he's okay. He's going to make it. And I kind of am glancing around the car because at this point, I don't know everything that he's into. And I'm like, really trying to assess the situation. Like, is someone coming for us? Like, is there a car that's about to come shoot us? I don't know. I don't know anything. I don't know him to do anything that's this crazy. So I look in the back and there's like a big bolt, like not a boulder, but like a big piece of cement, and it has blood all over it. And like just a bunch of weird stuff in the car. So I'm like, okay, we need to get out of here. So we get to the house. I drive his car. I leave my car there. I drive his car back to our house. He gets in the shower. I put a chair in there. He sits in the shower. And basically, he tells me to burn his clothes, get that rock, burn it. And that's when I started finding out everything that he was into. So I ended up, the house that we had was in my name under the guise of that, you know, my credit. We were going to build my credit and stuff. But with that company that he was actually buying these foreclosed homes. And this was like a relatively petty crime. He was taking out like all the appliances and things and then burning it or just anything to collect the insurance, vandalism, whatever. The police and the feds were after him. They raided the house. I didn't really know everything about everything at this point. They got these appliances that were in the garage that the insurance company had paid for and all this stuff. So then they arrested us both. The house is in my name. They start questioning me about all this stuff that has to do with him. I don't know anything about anything that they're asking me. I don't. I'm going to get in trouble for these appliances, and I know it. I probably would have just gotten probation, but he ended up fleeing the country. He came, part of my deal was I was going to get probation and I was going to go to rehab. I was in the rehab. He showed up at the rehab the last week I was there and he was like, I'm fleeing the country. I'm going to Russia. He had federal charges for heroin for bringing heroin from New York to Florida. He was like, do you want to come with me? And I'm not going to lie. I kind of wanted to go, but I was like, I don't know the language. I'm not going to be completely dependent on you. So I did not go. I stayed. When I stayed, this is when my life of crime started because I was still addicted to pills and I was still addicted to money and everything. And my mom, you know, I'm in my mid-20s at this point. My parents are well off, but they're not shoveling cash my way. And also they know I have an addiction and they know I'm in rehab and I'm just getting out. They know that I was with this crazy Russian. They're not just going to start forking over money. And I don't really have anything of my own yet because everything was tied to him. So I decided that I was going to do what I knew how to do and what I had learned from him, and that was burglarize. And so that was how I was going to feed my habit because pills were expensive at this point. I mean, they started like $8 a pill, and then they started going towards $20 a pill. And so, but I didn't have the muscle anymore, and I didn't have the weapons, and I didn't have him, you know, and I just had me, and I'm not threatening, and I don't look scary, and I just, how am I going to come into large sums of money without holding someone up with the weapon? So I was like, okay, I hatched a plan. I made a checklist, how I'm going to break into homes, what I'm going to do to make sure it's successful, how to find the homes that were the right ones that were going to be profitable. And every day I would wake up like a job, three, four days a week. I would get up 5, 6 in the morning. I would go, I would find the area I was going to target. I would have my checklist. I would be dressed a certain way. And then I would, you know, I'd feed my habit. I'd live. And I made a lot of money doing that. Made a lot of money like that.
Do you think that had you asked your parents for the money or help or told them what was going on, your life would have ended out differently? Like, do you think they would have helped you and this could have saved you?
Yeah, for sure. I think if I would have told them, 100% they would have helped me. But the problem was that I wasn't looking for that kind of help. Like, the only help they could have offered me at that point was a rehab. And I still had this, I don't know what I was lacking, but I had this thing where I wanted this excitement, this crazy chaos, and I was confusing toxicity and things that were bad with excitement. And I was like, there were plenty of people in my life who would have helped, who were nice, who were good men, good women, good friends, good family men. Nothing got to me the way that a powerful person did. And the powerful people I was meeting were also corrupt and did illegal things. And, you know.
So it all started with the Russian.
I've been eating Factor meals weekly for almost a year now, and it's a 10 out of 10 for me. They're no fuss, no mess meals. Eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. All I have to do is simply heat and savor the good stuff. You could be like me and eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. Use my promo code LOCKEDIN50 at factormeals.com/LOCKEDIN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. I love to choose the chef's choice meal option, so each week I get a variety of different meals that feature premium ingredients like the filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And you want to know what's great about Factor? You could customize your weekly meals with the flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. It makes meal planning so much easier, and you could control all of your scheduling and deliveries right from your phone on the Factor app. If you have a work trip or vacation coming up, it's so quick and easy to reschedule a delivery so your meals don't go to waste. So what are you waiting for? Factor is your solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. And if you head to factormeals.com/LOCKEDIN50 and use code LOCKEDIN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Thank you to Factor for sponsoring today's episode. Now let's get back into my interview with Jennifer Gomez.
It all started with the
Russian. Isn't it crazy that one person that walks in your life can have such a profound effect on the rest of your life? Like, you see some of these people in shitty relationships and stuff like that, and that just... that affects them. It really is. Like, your success is based on who you surround yourself with.
Absolutely.
And I think that's what I got into trouble about, because I was always around shitty people that didn't have the same work ethic, weren't in my best interests.
Yep.
It's like, and now I'm around people that want to be around me and don't necessarily need something from me.
Right.
So it's such a different feeling.
Yeah. It's definitely who you surround yourself with is going to be one of the biggest factors in determining what direction you go in. I mean, and that's from a kid when you're influenced as, you know, at school, as a teenager in your 20s, even, I mean, like now, even in your 20s, 30s, 40s, like it is a huge factor because literally you cannot be around. I really think like speaking things and manifestation and believing things is, I think it has a lot of value and power. And literally just being around people who are not like-minded, people who want things from you, you can't tell me that you're not going to start thinking and doing the same things. I had no interest in becoming a cat burglar. And by the way, I say cat burglar. People are like, why do you say cat burglar? It's because there's like an element of stealth to a cat burglar versus someone who throws a rock through your window, runs out with your laptop, and takes it to the pawn shop. It's not what I was doing. So I say cat burglar because I was in your neighborhood. I talked to people. They saw me, and no one could ever point me out or even say that, hey, it was this woman or this girl. Like they, so that's why I say cat burglar, for the record. But yeah, like I never would have said, hey, I want to wake up and be a cat burglar. This is what I'm going to do. No, it was because I was with my Russian, and he's dead, by the way. But anyway,
oh, wow.
He got murdered last year. Oh, my God. He looks so excited.
In the States or in?
Yeah. Like
so he came back.
Yeah. I never
so he never went to prison.
Listen, I would not talk about him. I would only just say like the Russian, and I would be very like shallow and superficial with it. But when he died, I was like, okay, it's all good now. Yeah. So because, you know, I don't want
anyone. Now, is he the father of your kid? Or
no. Okay. Listen.
We'll get into that.
Okay. But, yeah. This is like the little Cliff's Notes version of it. Basically, he did flee the country. And he went to Turkey and he hid out there for a long time. I got a 10-year sentence. And around my seventh year in, I get a call out to classification, and it's a legal call out. And usually when you get a legal call out, it's because you're either fighting your case and it's your attorney wanting to do something, or it's some sort of detectives or somebody like that trying to ask you questions or pin new charges on you. So I wasn't fighting my case. I'm like, why do I have a legal call out at classification? I was tripping. So I get down there and it's this PI on behalf of an attorney, and the PI is there with an affidavit that they want me to fill out and sign, and basically clearing the Russian of anything that was attached to my crimes, because he wanted to come back into the country because his father was sick. And I was like, and it pissed me off because literally, you know, you knew where I was this whole time. You knew I was right here at this address at prison, and you never bothered to write and be like, hey, are you okay? Are your cookies getting taken? Are you eating? Do you need $5? Yeah. Like, do you need it? Are you okay? Okay. Like nothing. But then you send a whole ass person to see me and ask me to get you off the hook for stuff that he wasn't even on the hook for. My stuff, the stuff I went, it was like all mine. But he didn't know that because he fled initially in the early stages when it was just the appliances. He didn't know I went on to become a cat burglar. So he wanted me to do him a favor, and you didn't even, yeah, he didn't even ask about my cookies or anything. Like, why would you not even want to know about my well-being, knowing that you were the catalyst to this entire situation? I'm not putting the blame on him. Okay, let's be real. It wasn't his fault that all this happened, because obviously I was looking for something that was exciting. And if it wouldn't have been him, it probably just would have been something else and someone else, or just something else and me alone. But I don't know that I would have gone that far, that fast, that deep ever had it not been for him. So yeah, I feel like you can check on me.
This once. Sounds literally like a scene from a TV show.
Yeah, well, it felt like it because I was sitting there like, you're the kidding,
drama.
Right?
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, you're actually asking me to sign this sworn affidavit, getting him off the hook for stuff that he's not even in my case. And no.
I feel like most, like, if I've known women that, you know, when they want money, when they need money, or they're in a similar situation, yeah, like you were, the last thing on their mind is committing burglaries. They're thinking of, like, in this day and age, OnlyFans,
right,
or
listen,
sending nudes or anything like that, or hustling a man, yeah, whatever, you know, finding a fake boyfriend, a sugar daddy. I'm sure they had sites like that.
And they did.
What I was mean, it for you back then that it, your mind just triggers crime, you know, like burglary?
Yeah. That's crazy because everything you've stated, anything that a woman can use to get money quickly, especially from men, it's pretty solid. It's legit. It works and it's fast. But I have this huge issue that I can't fake the funk. Like, I cannot pretend to want to hang out with you, to like you, to be attracted to you, to sleep with. I can't fake wanting to anything with you, even sit in a room with you.
I made the cut.
Just to, well, yeah, I mean, you're cute, so. But I can't fake it and then get something in return. And be, like, I can't, I'll get disgusted very quickly. And I know that this all sounds good, like, oh, like, you know, but it's true. Like, I just cannot. I had a friend one time, she was in high school. I was a little bit older than her. She worked at a strip club, and it was weird because she was like her family was like church people. And she did this on the side. Nobody knew about it, but she was really good. She made a lot of money, and she was like, right, she was like a senior in high school. So she took me one day with her, and she was like, all you got to do is sit at the bar, and these guys will pay like $500 to have a conversation with them. I couldn't even do that because the first guy was so greasy and I was so disgusted that I couldn't sit there anymore because I couldn't even focus on the conversation. I was looking at everything. So I knew it wouldn't work. And I was like, I don't have the energy, the time, the fakeness, that I can't fake the funk and put all of this into getting this from a guy and hoping it'll work when I can just do this, and I know I can do this, like, for sure. I mean, they didn't have OnlyFans back then.
Yeah,
so
that
I
was
mean, they
a
had
fair
sites.
Answer,
they had, like, you know, like Craigslisty stuff like that where you could escort and do stuff. But if your balls smell, I'm gonna be pissed. Just stuff like that. Like, you know what
your
I mean?
Balls smell.
Yeah. Like, no, I remember I hooked up with this guy one time in high school, and there was some weird stuff going on. And I was like,
yeah, but there's no way to know about
there's
that before
no way,
you do so.
Exactly. My point exactly. So I wasted all this time planning to meet up with you, meeting up with you, and then your balls stink, and now I don't have any money because I'm disgusted, I've made a face, and I've left because I've gagged. No. No.
Well, at least you're honest.
No.
There's nothing worse than the people that aren't honest and they fake it and then everything like that, you know?
Yeah. I just felt like robbing was the better.
All right. So walk us through an entire burglary. Okay. Like from the beginning, the stakeout, how you pick the place,
okay.
the whole thing.
Yeah. So the stakeout was actually not really a big part of it. I rarely ever saw a home prior to breaking in and thought, I'm going to come back. Like it was just, it was 99% of the time a crime of opportunity. However, I did have some things in place. So in order to ensure that the home was going to be a lucrative hit and that I was going to get something out of it, obviously nobody knows for sure, but to the best of my ability, I always wanted homes that were nice. I mean, at least $1 million homes, maybe not multi-million because, you know, now we're talking a lot of security, but at least maybe $500,000 to $1 million homes. Nice, affluent neighborhoods. I would always try to find a home that was in a cul-de-sac so I wouldn't get lost in there, or a home that backed up to a street. Not like a main street, but just maybe like a two-way street that was right outside the neighborhood, because sometimes I would have to jump a fence if I had to get out of there quickly. My car was on the other side and then I'm gone. I always wanted like shrubbery, bushes, landscape, which wealthy people, they usually fall. And let me just say this. I knew a lot of things about how wealthy people lived because my parents are both physicians. And so I lived in a nice neighborhood. I know what my parents did. I know what my friends' parents did. It's kind of the same thing. They all kind of do the same thing. So I know that they're going to have a nice landscape. They're going to have things and shrubbery and trees and things that I can hide behind. They're probably going to have a privacy fence of some kind. I can hide behind that. When I get in their backyard, I'm completely concealed. Everybody has an alarm that has money. I feel like if you have an alarm, you have something worth protecting. So I would always try to make sure there's an alarm. And rich people always want to advertise all of their security. This home is under surveillance, ADT alarm system stickers, you know, just everything everywhere, the picket in the front of the yard. Like they just want you to know. But for me, that was a good thing because what you're telling me is you have things to protect. And now I know there's an alarm system, so I'm going to work around it. I can see if the motion sensors are on. I can see if the alarm is even on because you can just look right through a window or the door and see if it's red or green. You know, you can see if it's armed or not. So there's a lot of things that you can tell from the outside of a home that will give a burglar a lot of information. And that's why I always tell people, like, stop advertising everything that's going on in your house and with your house. So I would always look for shrubbery, a privacy fence, a cul-de-sac, very nice neighborhoods, at least $500,000, if not $1 million homes, some sort of advertisement that security, that there's a security system in place. I always, for the most part, if I can help it, try to make sure there's an animal in the house. A lot of rich people will say, in case of fire, please save my cat or dog. They have the sticker for the fire department on the front door. That's good for me. Rich people don't crate their animals. They let them walk around. Golden retrievers are not, you know, pit bulls in the cage. Golden retrievers walking around the house. So I know that if your dog's walking around the house, your motion sensors are not on. So I can walk around your house freely. So all I have to do is break a window and not separate a magnet, and then I'm in there. Your dog's not going to scare me if I know there's a dog. Or I always brought some kind of food. I would bring steak. I'd bring chicken. I'd have a sandwich in the car. If there's a dog that does look a little scary, I'm giving it food, and I promise he's fine. Like, unless he's like a Belgian Malinois or something that's trained to eat me, he's eating the sandwich. I promise. He's not going to get me. I'd take him to a room. I'd shut that door, leave him in there, and I'd go about my business. I only really need to go into the master bedroom, an office, and maybe like if there's another guest room or something like that. But the master bedroom and the office is really the only places you need to go. So I would look for all of those things. Once I could find, oh, and the day is important. I would really prefer, and I, you know, in Florida, there's a lot of rain and a lot of humidity, so that's very common. I would prefer that it's a rainy or at least drizzling because people are not outside. They're not gardening. They're not mowing their grass. There's not landscapers. There's not anyone jogging in the neighborhood. There's not a mom pushing her baby. Like, they're just not out. And even if they are somewhere they can see me, there's like rain droplets on the window. So they really don't know what they're looking at. I got a very average car. I got a silver Impala, Chevy Impala, just a silver Chevy Impala. Tinted the windows, so average. You know, I don't know many wealthy people that would be able to point that car out and say what it is, like a police car maybe. Like, they don't know.
And what are you wearing?
So when that was another aspect of it. I always made sure to wear scrubs and pull my hair back, and I didn't wear any makeup. I tried to look as young as possible. And I always wore scrubs because I was there under this ruse that I was a med spa for dogs. like, I'm here to pick up Rufus and Sammy to go to the med spa or to the pet spa. I love med spas, to the pet spa. You know, groomers that come and pick them up and stuff. So I look the part when I'm wearing these scrubs and I'm knocking on these people's door, because that's the next part. So if I find a home, right, I don't scope it out prior. I make sure that it at least has an alarm. Hopefully the alarm is set. Hopefully there's an animal walking around. Hopefully it's raining. And if some of those factors aren't in play, it's okay. But that's what I look for. I wear the scrubs. I always wore a shoe that was either one size too big or one size too small. I just got that from TV straight up. I don't know if anyone ever got my shoe print, but I stepped in people's dirt. So if they did, it wasn't my shoe print. And I always had gloves on. Then I had a little purse and I had tools in it. So I would knock on the door. That was the first thing. Knock, 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 like relentlessly knocking on the door. If they did not answer, if they did answer, let's just say they didn't answer. Let's go there first. I'm not breaking in. Obviously, they're home. So if they did answer, I'd be like, hey, I'm here to pick up Sammy and Rufus for the pet spa, you know, da, da, da. And of course, they're going to say, you have the wrong house. And I'd be like, oh, is this the Robinsons? Is this the Smiths? Just like some very just generic, common, average name. And they'd be like, no. And I'd be like, oh, gosh, okay, I'm so sorry. Let me go back to my car and, you know, call my boss and whatever. And I'd leave. Sometimes I'd leave the neighborhood depending on how big the neighborhood was. Sometimes I wouldn't. Now, if they didn't answer, I still wanted to make sure, like, what if they're in the shower or something? So I'd go around and I'd go to their privacy fence. I'd open it. I'd climb it. I'd jump over the bush, whatever. And I'd get in the backyard and I'd start knocking on windows. Knocking on windows. Now I've changed up. I've changed my spiel because I'm not in your yard for Sammy and Rufus, because that's like a hell of a determined pet spa if they're in your backyard to pick up your dogs. So now I have to change it up. So now I'm knocking on the window because nobody's answered. And I'm like, Miss Barbara, Miss Sarah, you in there? And I'm knocking and I'm trying to really look desperate, because if someone greets me in their backyard and they come out there, I have to have a really good story as to why I'm in your backyard. That's hella weird. So I'm like, Miss Sarah, Miss Suzanne, hey, are you in there? Hey, open up. Come to the door. Your daughter wanted me to check on you. She's at work. She couldn't come. So basically the story was, if somebody came out, that your daughter wanted me to come check on you, do like a wellness check, so to say, because you're not answering the phone, you're elderly, and I had a break, so she asked me to come. I'm her good friend. Now, if someone came out, obviously, it's not Miss Sarah or Miss Susan's house either, but I'm going to say again, oh my God, I'm so sorry. You know, it's my friend's mom, and I'm trying to check on her, make sure she's okay. She's elderly. They're not going to get mad at that point because I'm trying to do a nice thing. So if they do not answer, if they answer a window or a door, they come to the backyard, that's what I would say. Go about my business. But if they don't, then I would go and I would find a window. I try to find the master bedroom window. And, you know, I knock a little, I tap it, try to see if it's tempered glass, if it's not, if it's hurricane windows, if it's not. Depending on what kind of window it is, it's going to shatter differently. But all in all, I got a tool from a hardware shop and it cuts glass. It makes like an outline. Doesn't cut through, but it makes like an outline. Did I mess it up?
No, you're good.
Okay. It makes like an outline. And, when it makes the outline, it has like a little hammer attached to it, and then you tap it and it falls. So either like fall out, has a little suction thing, you can suck it out, or it'll just shatter. And, you know, it's tempered glass, it'll shatter. And then it just kind of falls into the screen, and then I just pull the screen off and put it to the side. I go in. I make sure the hole is big enough. I'm not like a huge person, so I just like kind of tiptoe in through the hole. And hopefully the alarm doesn't go off. You know, because sometimes people have a thing where the motion detectors are on in the room, but not like in the living rooms, which is so smart, by the way. Hey, people, if you ever have an alarm system, turn the motion sensor off in your room. Just shut that door. Don't let the dog and turn it on in your room. Because if somebody comes in there, it'll go off immediately when it senses motion. So anyways, I would go through a little hole. I would walk in, hopefully, the master bedroom, wherever I'm at, and I start looking around. I try to scope things out. First thing I do when I get into a house and I've broken in is I go and I lock the garage door. I lock the garage door because, generally speaking, from what I've seen in my house and in other people's homes, people don't lock their garage door. Like the door that leads from the garage to the inside of their house, they usually go in through their garage. They're like, gene, that garage opens. They go in, they park, and then they walk in their door. That door is never locked. Only thing that's locked is the front door. So basically, I feel like if I lock that door, I'll hear commotion because people are going to be like, what the hell? Why is my door locked? You know, who locked the door? And that has worked. But So I go unlock that door and then I start like rummaging and doing things. And from there, I find what I need to find. I look for cash. I look for gold. And then I get the hell out of there. And, you know, everything's always been pretty okay.
You never had like a close call situation?
Hell yeah, I've had a close call.
Give us that one.
Horrible. I've had like three or four close calls. So I had, this story is crazy, but I had a story where I pulled a safe out of a house. And I just knew this safe had like, I swore it had $1 million in it. I felt it in my soul. I just knew I could retire that day, at least for a little while, for like 10 years. So I'm like, how the hell am I going to get this safe out of this house? I've broken in, I've succeeded at everything, but I cannot lift this safe up and get it out the hole that I came in. I cannot do it. So the only way I can get this safe out is to drag it out. So I get a sheet and I drag it through the house. I mean, I'm dragging it over these marble tile floors and I'm just like dragging it to the front door, but now I have a problem because I have to open the front door to get it out. If I open the front door, the alarm's going to go off. The alarm goes off, the police are going to come. Eventually, they don't come quickly. But basically, I have a good 45 seconds before it starts going woo, woo, woo. So I'm scared. So I go back out the window. I go to my car. I back the car up all the way to the front door. Ian, I'm telling you, it was the craziest. I don't know. People are crazy. Perception is a mother. I'm telling you, because my car, this silver Impala, not a glamorous car, was backed up all the way to these people's front door, over their grass, over their sidewalk, up to their front door with the trunk open and with the back doors both open. So imagine seeing that, like how odd that looks. Why am I'm in their lawn. I'm over their lawn. Okay, anyways. So I open the door and I'm pulling the sheet. And now the sheet's not gliding as smoothly anymore because it's grass and it's cement now and it's not gliding. So it's taking a little longer. I get to my trunk and I'm like trying to get into my trunk with all my might and soul, but I'm putting it on my foot. I'm putting it on my knee. I can't lift it. So I'm like, okay, let me go to the back door because the back door, like the floor part, it's a little lower than the trunk. So at least I think I can roll it in there, which I am able to. But as I'm dragging from the trunk to the back door, I see out my peripheral this movement and I kind of like look, like I side eye and I see a man and a woman. Looks like a woman's a little further behind him, but the man's a little bit close. And I'm like, fuck, because the guy is looking at me. Because now the alarm has started going off behind me. So I'm dragging a bed sheet with a safe on it, a car that y'all don't recognize, pulled up to these people's front door, backed up with the trunk open, and the alarm in the background is going, woo, 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 woo. And I'm like, oh my God, this is really bad. Okay, what am I going to do? So I pull my cell phone out. And I'm like, Mom, I cannot believe this. I'm home from college. You got me doing this crap. I don't remember the alarm code. The alarm's going off. I'm trying to bring the safe to your office. I can't even lift it. And I'm trying to say this all really loud so that it looks like I'm just like the daughter of these people who's having this chaotic situation and it's just going crazy. And it worked because as I put the thing in my pocket, as I put the phone in my pocket, because now, you know, I have to acknowledge this guy because I see he's getting closer. I look over, we catch eye contact and he's like, hey, sweetheart, you need some help with that? And I'm like, no, sir, I'm fine. Thank you. I'm good. No, stay over there. And so at that point, he's like, OK. And I'm like, but still, I mean, it's only a matter of time. You know, I have a couple minutes, but. Yeah, I got it in the back seat, and there was not $1 million, by the way. There was like passports and birth certificates and, you know, marriage.
You were able to get into the safe?
I did. I had a safe guy. I used to pay him. We had a deal like, hey, you just open it. You don't look in it. You know, you just give it back to me. I pay you and that's it. Whether there's a cardboard box in it or $1 million, you don't know and it's not your business. I pay you and that's it. He opened it and it was just a lot of paperwork, important paperwork.
So that was a big risk for nothing.
Big risk for nothing. I went back to their house like 4 days later and returned their papers. I felt bad. It was like birth certificates, socials. Like I felt guilty. I felt bad.
So where do you leave it? In the mailbox?
In the mailbox. Yep.
That was nice. That's good karma right there.
Yeah, man. I don't know. I was like, man, this is these people's entire life right here on paper. It's like, deeds to homes, like all their kids, you know, it just felt wrong. So, but it was very eye-opening because in that moment it was like, holy hell, because of my appearance, I can really commit an entire felony in your face and you can offer to help me do it and you'll never think twice about it. And it's because of the way I look and I'm a female.
Isn't that wild?
It's wild.
No.
Because if it was a guy, with saggy pants and like gold teeth, any race, they would have called the cops immediately. Probably blocked him off. But with me, they're offering to help, and it's insane.
And what were you, late 20s or early 20s or mid-20s?
I was like 27.
27.
Yeah. But I have another one where someone actually walked into the house. I have two where someone walked in. And one of them, I walked in – or I went into the house, and I actually was in the master bedroom. When I broke in and I went, I was in the master bedroom. And I was looking through the first drawer – and I was kind of scoping, because one thing about wealthy people is they generally keep large sums of money in case there's like a hurricane and the bank's closed or something crazy. So they're going to have like 5, 10, 20 grand in a bank envelope, in a sock drawer, or in a closet, in a purse. Like, it never fails, never. So I'm going through this first drawer and I see a gun. I know I don't want to touch the gun because, for one, I mean, I don't have any business touching it. But if you touch a gun during a burglary, it becomes an armed burglary. You don't have to bring the gun in. You don't have to take the gun out. If you touch the gun during a burglary and there's nobody around, even if you moved it, it's an armed burglary, which raises it from a second-degree felony to a first-degree felony. So, did you just yawn with your mouth closed?
No, I just, like, I swallowed. It wasn't like a yawn.
I was going to say, man, that's talent. Okay.
No, it was like a, I don't know, I do it a lot. Like, it's like a swallow.
I was like, damn, he's like hardcore yawning over there, but not even moving his mouth.
Okay. No, you're good.
So.
It's very entertaining, don't worry.
I was like.
I'm not like.
Oh, good. Oh. I was like, fuck, because I see your eyes doing like this sometimes, and I'm like, fuck, let me change the story up.
No, ignore my eyes. Okay. It's got nothing to do with it.
Okay. So, and I'm trying to have energy too, because I'm fucking exhausted.
You're doing great. You're killing it.
So I'm in this house and I'm going through the drawers, and because I know not to touch the gun for those reasons, I take the gun and I move it aside. I just put it on the dresser and I move it aside. And I start finding little random things. Like, I start finding some gold and stuff. And my thing is, I melt gold down, and I melt it into 5-ounce gold bricks. Now, I call them bricks. People assume bricks are huge. They're bars. It's comparable to like the size of a business card. Okay. It's 5 ounce. That's how much a 5-ounce gold bar is. So I used to melt the gold down. I used to melt it in 5-ounce gold bars. I had the template. I used to use a guy's machine, his refinery. And this was back, you know, years ago when refineries were not that popular. And I used to pay him to use his machine. He had nothing to do with my crimes. And that was it. Then I used to take the gold bars and I used to sell them to gold collectors online or in person. So that was my thing. So I was looking for gold and cash. That's it. Unless I was trying to find a safe that had $1 million, that didn't. But so I'm in this house and I'm getting some things. And for some reason that day, because I had different purses that I would take, because, you know, I need something to put the things in. But I also don't want to have like a suitcase, because I'm there under this guise of the dog, you know, the dog spa. So I basically had this little purse. And for some reason, the purse was a little smaller that day than normal. I don't know what I grabbed, but it was smaller. And there was paperwork in it. And the paperwork happened to be probation paperwork that I had for my old case with the appliances. So I was on – I got probation for this case that I had with these appliances that were in the garage. And I had these papers in there that were linked to my probation. That thing drug out in court for a while, but finally it was done. And that's what – you know, I got probation. I had these papers. I took them out because they were in the way. So I take the papers – excuse me, I take the papers out of the purse so that I can accommodate all the things I'm going to get. And I put it on the dresser next to the gun. And as I'm going through things, I turn to go towards the closet, because the closet is to my left. And as I'm doing all of this, all of a sudden I hear, "Hey, what are you doing?" in like the deepest of deep linebacker holy hell voice. And I'm like, my back is to the door frame. So I turn around slowly, and there is a linebacker. This man has to be like, I mean, I was younger, so maybe he just looked huge. No, hell no. That man was like 6'3 and a good solid 300 pounds. He's in the door frame. He's blocking the whole door frame. And so I know I can't get past him. And he's like, "What are you doing?" And I can see the confusion, because like, what the fuck am I doing? You know what I'm saying? I look like this little girl and it's like, what am I doing? So I promise you, I had never said this. I had never planned to say this. I had never thought in this situation, if I run into a guy alone, I'll say this. Never. Somehow, out of nowhere, comes out of my mouth, "I'm a juvenile. Don't touch me. Don't touch me. I'm a juvenile. Don't touch me. I'm a juvenile." And I just kept repeating it. "Don't touch me. I'm a juvenile. Don't touch me. I'm a juvenile." And I mean, he didn't know what to do. And my thing was like, I wanted to really freak him out, because you're in this house alone. I'm in this house alone. And who are they going to believe? You know what I'm saying? So, and so, like, it was, okay, I know it's fucked up. Okay, I get it. But, like, I had to get out. So I'm saying this, and I'm backing up, and I keep saying, I'm a juvenile, don't touch me. I'm only a juvenile, don't touch me. And I can see that he's getting more and more confused as to why the hell there's a juvenile in his bedroom with a shattered window and his stuff looks rummaged through, you know, like it was weird. So I back up. Finally, I hit the wall. My back hits the wall. And I know now I'm next to the window because, I mean, I'm in the room. I know what the layout looks like. I've been in there a good 10 minutes. So I hit the wall, and I know the window's right next to me. And as I'm doing this, he has not moved out of the door frame. But I know there's a gun on that dresser. He knows it's in the drawer. I don't know. This, I'm freaked out. I'm scared. A lot of things could go wrong here. I turn around. I haul ass. I get out the window. Boom, I make it. I'm gone. I make it to my car. In this scenario, I had parked on the other side of a fence. So I had jumped the fence. I had gotten into my car. I was gone. Baby, I was gone. I was out of there. I was like, okay, I'm
but the
good.
Papers are
I'm
on the dresser.
Could you just hold on for one second?
Well, it's exciting.
Okay? So I'm literally driving. I'm like a mile down the road. And I'm like, damn, let me see what I got. Because I did grab a couple things, you know. So I look over and I look at the purse and I'm going to grab it. And as soon as I look at the purse, I'm like, oh, fuck, the papers. The papers. The papers that were supposed to be back in my purse are not in my purse because they're on the guy's dresser. The papers that are probation papers, if you know anything about probation papers, they have all your information. You're not getting away. So in that moment, I start slowing down my car and I'm like, okay, I have two options. I can either not go back and 100% get caught because he's going to find the papers eventually. Or, and at best, maybe have like a couple days of freedom. Or I can turn around, I can try to go back in, and I have a 50-50 shot. I might make it, and I might get the papers, and I might make it, and I might get slammed. I don't know. So I'm taking the 50-50 because I have to try. Like, if I don't, I'm just caught. I'm just fucked. It's done. It's done. Mind you, I'm on probation, too, for the other thing. So I'm violating, and I have new charges. Not good. So turn around, skirt. I go back. I park in the same, basically the same area, but a little further down. Like, so it was backyards and there was like a privacy fence and then that backed up to a street, but it wasn't in like a main road or anything. It was like a little two-way street. So there was like a little like shoulder of that two-way street. It wasn't even a shoulder. It was like a little, maybe like a bike lane or something. I put my blinkers on, man. I put that thing, the car right there. I got out. I didn't jump his fence because I didn't know where he was, but I jumped his neighbor's fence. Now, in his neighbor's backyard, from there, I can hear this man, who I assume is this man, because he's very, it's a loud, deep voice, very deep voice. I can hear him describing me and describing the scenario. So I'm assuming he's on the phone with the police, which is good because now I know not only is he outside, but I have a couple minutes. There's no active threat. I'm not in the house. I don't have a weapon. I know the cops in this area. They're not coming right away, sir. They're coming in like an hour. So I know I have some time, but even better, I know he's outside. So I'm like, all right, bet, good. So I jump the fence that goes into his yard from his neighbor. I go in through the window. I get my papers, and I go back out through the window. And I'm thinking, everything is on my side right now. Like, this could not get any better. Like, things couldn't get any better. So, for some reason, I don't jump his fence to go back to my car because it's a little further down. So, I just, like, I'm a creature of habit. So, I just went the same way that I came in. I jumped the neighbor's fence. And as I'm pretty casually walking to the back of his fence to jump to the street, all of a sudden, boom, I get slammed and I hit the ground. And I'm on the grass and I'm like this and I can't see anyone, but there's somebody very big on top of me. And I'm like, this cannot be fucking happening. Number one, and I'm really confused because I'm in the neighbor's yard. You both have privacy fences. I know your big ass did not get from where I just heard you in 30 seconds while I got these papers all the way to me without me hearing a fence open or something. So I kind of look and I hear the guy, I hear a man start saying, I don't know the guy's name, Harry or Henry. I got her, Henry, I got her. And I'm like, so he grabs me up like this and Henry comes flying around the corner from the fence part, grabs my other arm. And now I look and it's this tall, skinny black guy and the big, huge white guy that was in the doorframe. And I don't know how the fuck Henry told dude, about me in the 3 minutes I was gone. I don't know what transpired because I never saw him again. I mean, you know, I went to jail.
This was the time you got arrested?
I got arrested that day.
Holy fuck.
And then a dude that tackled me, the neighbor, the Good Samaritan, then he tried to hit on me after the fact. And he was like, hey, you're pretty cute. You know, can I call you when you get out? And I'm like, bitch, you just got me caught. We could have gone. I would have faked the funk on that day. I would have faked the funk that day for that.
You would have got down for that.
Yeah, yeah. I'd have been like, yes, you we offer? Can go out right now. No, I was pissed.
I would have. If I was in that position, I would have been like, you know, maybe I'll do whatever I got to do.
Listen, I'm not going to lie. I would not have been above offering had he not already called Henry. But Henry was already there. Like everything, the cops were coming. He had already outed me. It's not like he tackled me and then was like, hold on, let me check you out first before I call Henry.
So what'd they do, hold you until the cops came?
They held me.
Did they tie you up or something?
No, they just held each arm, and I wiggled a little.
What are you doing? Are you talking to them? Or?
No, I was pissed. They kept asking me, the guy, Henry, whatever his name was, he kept asking me like, hey, what, you know, why did you break my house? What did you do? Why did you say you're a juvenile? Are you a juvenile? How did you get here? Who are you with? Just question after question, but I wasn't saying anything.
Do you ever think about what would have happened if you didn't go back and maybe you could have still been on the lam to this day?
No, I actually never have because I'm not a runner. I don't think I would ever be able to cope with feeling like I'm being chased and have to live like that. I don't think I could do it. I think I'd turn myself in at some point just because I'd go nuts having to look over my shoulder all the time. So
wow. Way to go down.
Damn, tell me about
That's such a shitty situation because either way you look at it, you were kind of screwed.
I know. Well, I mean, if dude didn't tackle me, I very well would have just made it out and been fine with my papers because I got my papers.
Well, I'm saying whether you went back or not was the risk, you know, if you carried it either
absolutely,
way.
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
So the cops arrest you and
so they arrested
me.
They took me away. And then there was another time. I mean, this one wasn't as scary as that one, but I was actually in the house. And I locked the garage door. I had broken in. Everything was going, you know, peachy, squeaky clean, what's that saying?
Squeaky clean?
No, everything was going peachy.
Peachy?
Peachy keen?
Just peachy.
Peachy Q?
No, isn't it just
no,
peachy?
No, there's something.
I'll say just peachy.
Oh, well, I guess you don't know.
Is this
either.
Another young joke? Jeez Louise.
Oh, God. Okay, everything was going peachy keen. So, yeah, everything was fine. Like, I was in the house. Everything was good. I was golden. But all of a sudden, I start hearing, like, grocery bags and people talking. It sounds like a kid and a mom. And I'm like, am I tripping? Like, is there a TV on in this house? What is going on? So I come out of the room I'm in, which is the master room. And when you come out of the master room, oh, God, I'll never forget it. There's, like, a long hallway. I love you.
Don't break the mic. You break it, you buy it.
Ian, I literally tapped it on accident.
Like for 10 times already now.
I understand. Well, you got somebody talks with their hands. Shit.
Yeah, okay. We got to tie those hands down the table, tape
all
them
right.
down.
Here we go. Okay. So.
It's okay if you hit it. I'm just teasing.
So, yeah, I'm in this house and everything's good. And I come down this long hallway because I'm hearing people and I'm like shitting bricks. But I'm also thinking that there's no way that they're in the house without me knowing. I didn't even hear a ding ding when a door opened. So I'm like, maybe not an Alexa, but like a something came on. Like they didn't have that shit back then. Something came on. And so I'm walking out there and all of a sudden I see a boy, like a teenage-ish boy, like a 15-year-old boy, walk across this hallway from the garage door into the kitchen. And I'm at the end of the hall walking towards them, like with a little bit of distance. And I'm like, so I stop and I freeze. And I get behind this pillar, this column that they had. They had these columns all over this house. And him and the mom are bringing in groceries. And I'm like, I don't want to go back. Oh, and this was the worst part. I'm in this house. My car is in their driveway. They have this long, I'm talking like, it had to be like a quarter of a mile long driveway. It was ridiculous. My car is in their driveway, but you can fit like three cars in their driveway, like next to each other, like horizontally. So I'm in one of the lanes and I don't know who they thought that car belonged to or what was going on, but eventually they were going to notice broken glass and then they're going to tie it together with the car and start looking for somebody. So I need to get out of there, but I cannot, I'm not going backwards. I'm not going back into that room and going through everything I just went through. I need to get to the front door or to the garage door and get out because that's what I'm closest to. So I'm hiding behind these pillars and I shit you not, in as these people are walking, it's like we were dancing. I'm like sliding across the pillars. I'm like gliding behind it as they're rolling around it. And finally, I did make it to the front door. I opened the front door and I just hot ass and ran. And as I got in my car and I was reversing, I was backing up like this. I saw the lady come to the door and start screaming, but I mean, I was out of there by then. And yeah, it was.
How many burglaries do you think you've committed over your career? And how many years did it span?
I mean, like my actual rap sheet, if you look it up, which is, I mean, anybody can look up anything. So I don't know why people lie about their stuff. It's all public record. Okay. However, my my rap sheet, I think there's like 30 on there or something, burglaries.
And how much money?
But to be fair, in court, it was over like 200. This went on from about 2008. Yeah, because that's what my first, when you look at my record, my first offense date is 2008 to 2011.
So I'm in high school and you're starting to just be the cat burglar. Yeah. How much money do you think you got overall?
So I would have had to pay back restitution, but in Florida, if it's any more than a million, then they can garnish wages for the rest of your life. So my lawyer really like fought hard. Once it hit a million, he was like, okay, let's do something else. How about we just play out to this, do that, whatever. So I don't know, but I would say it was probably in the $7 million-y range, somewhere in there. From 2008 to 2011.
What do you do with the money?
Let me tell you, an addict will find a way to addict that money very quickly. I bought nice material things, but a lot, sad to say, a lot of it went on pills, on pain pills. And because it was always just this mentality of like easy come, easy go. And as quick as I would get it is as quick as I would spend it. And I just got so used to, I mean, just to give you a little bit of reference, like, so back then, I mean, the price of gold changes every day, all the time, depending on the stock market. But back then, an ounce of gold was roughly like, I think it was like $1,300 an ounce. But just like I said, just for reference, like a Ziploc bag. Of gold, like a sandwich Ziploc bag of gold. Let's just say 14 karat. 14 karat gold in the U.S. is not really 14 karat. It's like 9 karat. But so 14 karat gold, Ziploc bag of it, minimal stones, so most of the weight is gold, would be back then between $21,000 and $24,000. So getting a Ziploc bag of gold from a house where there is people that are wealthy is not hard. I would be taking that bag. I would be taking in at least one Ziploc bag, if not a couple, like two or three, every other day. And that went on for those years. So, I mean, I have not really done the math. I think I would be very sad and ashamed if I did and be pissed off at myself. But I would say it was somewhere up in there between, like, let's just say the scope of 5 to 7 million in those years.
How are they able to connect you to the other robberies? Did you confess as part of your plea deal?
Kind of, yes. So the way that they were able to connect me to the burglaries, to all of them, is because if you go on FDOC, which is the Florida website for, you know, your all your charges and everything in your prison sentence, I have charges in multiple counties. On there is Marion, Clay, St. John's, Duval. I have four counties on that on my rap sheet. And basically, out of everything that I did, they could only pin me to one burglary, just one. But they were so pissed off that they spent, because they had helicopters, they had people following me. I mean, Ian, I would like to think that I'm fairly intelligent, but I have very dingy moments. And one of them was incredibly, it was out there, because I was actually driving out of the neighborhood and they had been surveilling an area because it kept getting hit by me and they did not know who they were looking for. And they had a helicopter. Depending on how big the neighborhood was, I would hit certain amount of houses. Like if the neighborhood's not that big and I've hit two houses or three, I'm leaving because now police presence is there, at least for one of the homes, if not more. So I would definitely try to make it a point to leave. But this neighborhood was huge. Okay, it had several entrances. It was gated. They had a man in the middle, like a manned gate at the front main entrance. I went in through the side and followed somebody that had a little code or something. So anyways, this neighborhood was huge. I had burglarized probably 4, 5, 6 homes that day, but I had also been there previously. Great neighborhood for me, for a burglar, for a thief. And what ended up happening was this particular day, I'm like, okay, I think I've done enough. You know, I've hit like 5, 6 homes in here. I think I'm good. I need to get out of here.
Let me call it a day.
Yeah, I need to call it a day. I'm literally leaving the neighborhood. And as I'm on the main neighborhood road and I'm passing by the little streets, the individual streets, I see a cop car on every street. And I'm like, damn, something's going on in here. This must be something serious. And then I hear a helicopter up top and I see it and I'm like, oh, hell no. There must be a really dangerous person in here, like a criminal. Somebody's probably got shot or something. Like, this is scary stuff. I need to get the hell out of here for my own safety. I pull out of the neighborhood. I pass cops. They see me. I have my windows rolled down because I always used to roll my windows down and just like be singing and just like acting like I'm just loving life. And they pass right by me and everything. When I finally got arrested at the end, they told me, they were like, we even had helicopters today. And I brought up that scenario and they were like, yeah, we were looking for you or for whoever it was. I mean, and to think that I was driving past all these cops and this helicopter thinking there's somebody really dangerous in here. I need to get out of here for my safety. And it was me. They were looking for me. I mean, I'm looking at them like, holy hell, I got to get out of here. I could be in danger. Y'all are looking for me.
What was your first call with your parents like?
Wait, I had to tell you something.
Oh, I thought you already told me.
No, it was because you asked me something and then I went off.
How they connected you.
Oh, they connected me.
Yeah, you said you admitted it.
I admitted it, but you know why I admitted it? Because they could get me on that one and they were like, if you don't admit to all of these, because I couldn't even tell them the ones I had burglarized. I didn't know the addresses. They pulled out a map in front of me. I was like, I don't know what the fuck. I don't know. I'm not even from this county. So anyways, they said, if you don't confess and take the blame for all of these. And I was like, well, how do you even know that? I don't even know those are mine. And they're like, it's method of entry. It's your MO, not that MO, but your method of entry is basically the same for every single one. And it's very, very specific and it's very distinct to you. And so, yeah, we know they're all yours. And if you don't confess to all of them and take this plea, we're going to hit you with 15 years on this one that we can get you because they found a piece of evidence on me. We're going to get you 15 years for that, then 5 years, and we're going to run it all consecutive. We're going to run it all consecutive, and it would have been like upwards of 22 years. So you can take the 10, you can cop out to all these. So I admitted it, and that's how they connected me to all of those. They basically bullied me. The government bullied me.
In Florida, is it based off of the dollar amount, or is it just the crime itself that put you in that 10-year category? Because it wasn't like an armed robbery.
Right. It's a point system. Okay. And it's a dollar amount. The point system is what will get you the years, and the dollar amount is what will get you the charge. So if it's like less than 300, it's like petty theft. If it's more than 300, it's grand theft. If it's more than like 5,000, it's like grand larceny. So,
and I was looking at your mugshots that you have, I think, on your TikTok. Mm-hmm. You look nothing like you do now because you were down bad with the addiction. So anyone that's listening to this has to go check out your TikTok to see the mugshots because you had like stuff all over your neck and like you were just like...
Oh, those were hickeys.
Those were hickeys?
Yeah.
Wait, why do you have a million hickeys on your neck?
Because I was going to prison for a while. So I was like, let me...
Were you on bond? They let you out on bail?
No, I went... Okay, so I went to prison.
Yeah.
And when I went to prison, I was there for like 4 weeks or so. I was in R&O. And they took me out, back out to court for another charge. Because charges, like throughout the entire span of my criminal career, charges were just constantly just, I mean, it was like an ebb and flow of charges. Just, they were coming and going. I'd wrap this one up, it'd be this one. That's why when you look at my rap sheet, it spans from 2008 to 2011, 2012, actually. I have 2012 cases that I was actually in prison at Lowell in 2012, but I was out to court. So I went out to court, and when I went out to court, I had a little moment with my son's father because
wait a minute, when you were at court?
No, I was in the county jail, but they have visitation there was through the screen. You didn't have
conjugal visits?
No, you did not. Okay. However, this is what happened. It was a small town. He grew up there. I did not. They knew the situation. He was the father, you know, of his only child, my only child. I was going to prison. So they let us have a little moment in one of the lawyer rooms. We didn't, like, have sex or anything, but we just had some moments.
He tore up your neck that bad in a few moments.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
So that is what you saw with
I thought that was drug marks.
No.
Oh,
No, they're hickeys. If you go back and look at them now,
pox.
you'll be able to know if you're
right, it makes sense now.
Yeah, it was like here, here, and here.
Yeah, I've never heard that before. This is the first.
Yeah, I don't know. I almost kind of feel like maybe it was like a, I don't know, because I'm not a hickey kind of person. Like, I don't, you know, I'm like 30 at this time, 29 or something. It's like hickeys are not the, but I don't know what
you
happened.
Had to go out with a bang.
Just went out with a bang, yeah.
So how did your parents react to the arrest, to the jail sentence? What was that like?
It was terrible. I mean, like I said, you know, they're retired now, but at this point, my parents are both physicians. My dad cut me off. He didn't talk to me. My mom stuck by me, but with boundaries and with good reason. She just was like, you know, She recognized and acknowledged that there was a point when things kind of, my whole life, just the trajectory just completely changed. And it's when I met the Russian. But she also acknowledged that I was not in the best headspace, because some of the things that I was thinking were exciting and attractive, you know, they're like huge red flags. You should run the other way. You know what I'm saying? So, and I wasn't. So clearly I was wanting something that wasn't good. And so my mom, she said, you know, I will stick by you. I will do what I can for you while you're in prison. She's not going to like overexert herself as far as making sure I have this, have that. You know, she did send me money every month. But she wasn't going to just disturb her whole life because I kept fucking up. And when I got out, she was like, you know, she was the only one, because everybody else stopped talking to me. My brothers, my sisters, my dad, nobody talked to me. My mom was the only person that talked to me. And she was like, when you get out, whatever money you have, I'll help you start. I have some money saved for you as well, because I had like a prepaid college fund before and I dropped out after my AA. So I had some money still from that. I didn't. My mom did. She had some money saved for me in hopes that like one day it would turn into something, we could invest it into something. But I took the money I had saved. She was like, you know, your first year, I will not hand you any money. I'm going to see what you're going to do. So I got out of prison, and with my great family and everybody having these amazingly financially stable lives and whatever. And I went to a hotel. I was in an extended stay hotel, and I lived there for like the first 4 months when I got out. It didn't help. I got out in February of 2020 and COVID happened in March. But
I got out a year earlier than you.
Yeah?
Yeah, I got out in 2019.
Oh, I don't know why I thought you'd been out longer than that.
No, I got out in 2019.
Man, you're kicking ass. You're just like a boss over here doing all this stuff.
I just started this a year ago. I worked at Whole Foods for almost 4 years.
Yeah, I remember he said that.
Yeah, so I didn't do anything.
When he said you just started this, is my hair doing okay right now?
Lovely, don't worry. Okay.
When he said you just started this like last year, or he said September, I think, is when you started doing it yourself, like everything yourself or something like that.
Yeah.
When he said that, I was like, for real? Because you have really a nice, like, seems like loyal, good audience that likes.
I think it just goes to who I am and my personality.
Letting
the guests
does.
Speak.
Absolutely does.
And things like that, and making them comfortable. Like, it's not, like, I feel like I can get away with asking super personal and awkward questions.
I do too.
Because, like, I've asked people about, like, sex or this and that, and people are fine with answering because I guess who I am. Like, if I was, like, creepy looking,
no,
I don't think it would have the same effect.
100%, because that hickey thing I just told you.
You wouldn't have told anyone else?
Nobody knows that. You know what everybody else in the world thinks it is? I mean, I've never addressed it publicly, but everybody else that's ever asked, I just said that I got into a fight with somebody and somebody, like, tried to choke me out. It doesn't look like that at all, but that's what I say because, like, I don't know. But, yeah, something about you just makes it – and that's good, because the thing that makes people want to watch any kind of show, podcast, interview, is to see the realness of it, not to, you know, to be fed a bunch of BS.
My business partner was saying yesterday, he's like, there's just something about you that gets people to, like, open up to
absolutely.
You. And you do it in, like, a nonchalant way.
You do. And also, you don't have a there's nothing about you that comes off like, okay, if I say this, I'm going to get judgment from him. Like, it's just, there's just not anything.
No, so. I'm never going to, like, if someone, I'm not going to say, like, you're a fucking whore, like, this or that. Why do you do this? Like, people share, like, I've had people share that they've been raped in prison. I've had people share that they've sucked dick for drugs. I've had a variety of things, you know? Like, just all of these crazy things. So who am I to judge? You know, we've all done shit. So, like, when we were talking about OnlyFans the other day, me and someone else, and, like, just anything, you know? Like, I'm open about it, and it's just, like, who cares,
when
you know?
When I knew that about the OnlyFans, I was like, oh,
well,
shit.
Well, this was a year ago. Don't get people confused. I was in the Hustle, like, fan page.
OnlyFans, man. Listen, I thought about it, too, but I was like, there's a big problem. You have to promote yourself to be successful, and I'm not getting out there and saying, hey, because, like, I don't even want to use my real name.
Well, apparently there's a way to do it, like, on Reddit and stuff. Like, you could promote it where no one knows it to you, and it involves, like, some marketing aspect, but there are ways to do it where no one kind of knows it to you and this and that. You know?
So I just want to say something.
What, now you're questioning me?
No, no. Yeah, well, no. Like, I'm just curious because, you know, in female prison, and I was in Florida, obviously, I was in a Florida prison, but because I was in the same prison for the whole 9.2 years, I saw a lot of women come and go that had, like, interstate compacts or had done time in other states. And pretty much it seems like everybody, with the exception of, like, California and Texas, had the same kind of story, the same kind of environment, the same kind of issues and dramas and stuff like that. I heard there was, like, a little more gang stuff in California and Texas. But other than that, everything seems to be, like, what I experienced. And we don't experience in the female prison. Like, I've seen crazy things, but it's not like what you guys saw. So I just always wanted to know, like, did they separate you guys by your crimes? Like, is that a thing? And is paperwork day, like, a real thing? Because in female prison, it's 100% not ever. I mean, I'll tell you about it if you want to know, but is that a thing in guys?
Yeah, so they're not checking your paperwork or anything, or chomos can – what do they even call them chomos?
And,
no. Yeah, so it's very nonchalant because they never get into that in, like, Orange is the New Black, which is what, like, a lot of prisons are like from a woman's perspective. I think they hit the nail on the head pretty good with that from what I've gathered.
I've never watched it.
Oh, you got to watch it. I read the book, too.
I read the book when I was locked up, but when I saw that she was federal, I was like, there's not really a – I mean, I can't.
I think it's kind of similar, from what I've interviewed with state people. But I knew nothing about paperwork, this and that, because at the detention centers, that's not really a thing because that's all people awaiting trial. They don't have paperwork, this and that.
Right.
Then, depending on where you go, like at a camp, there's no paperwork checking at a camp because it's mostly older people or people just that half snitch or this and that. But you're not classified by crimes. The only the only places it's about, like, how dangerous you are and what your sentence is.
That's
it goes
how
by
it
points.
Exactly. Yeah.
So at the camp, you couldn't be a sex offender at the camp, and you couldn't have danger. I forgot that they put, like, something on you. It's like a danger of the community or some type of block on you if you have that, or if you're – what is that?
I just want to make sure.
You need makeup on you?
Okay, yeah.
You can't have any, what's it called? Like deportation on you. You can't have anything like that on you.
That sounds,
Or else you'll get, you just won't be able to go to that prison. But then at the low, you're in, if it's 20 years or lower. So it could be, you could be guys that have been doing time for murder or rape or anything.
And then they're in their last little bit.
Yeah, exactly.
So
but there's not a lot of murders in the feds anyways.
Yeah, feds is like very like white. I don't know.
White collar, sex offenders, gang related stuff. If you were picked up or in RICO, anything like that.
Why do sex offenders go federal instead of state?
It's mostly all federal because it's over the internet. Mostly all those. I think there's limited state cases unless the feds don't want to pick it up. But most of these cases, they're federal and it's a mandatory 5-year minimum. You'd see a lot of guys that are, unless they're like high up. I would meet so many guys, and I actually had my lawyer that I went to trial with on the show yesterday, and we were talking about this. There's a lot of guys that, you know, with that one piece of child pornography or whatever, 5-year minimum, sometimes 10, those are the majority of them in prison. Then you have the outliers that are like the fucking Jared Fogles of the world, and they're getting like 20 or 30 years, or the violent ones. But most of them are nonviolent, just fucking perverts that are in there. And then you get guys that kind of looked like me, which is why I got picked on. And they were just like, they swore, oh, it got planted on me, or it was an accident, or this and that. And like that, I'd always get anxiety. I'm like, holy fuck, what if I go home and like all of a sudden, like this picture randomly shows up. And then I came to realize like, it doesn't just randomly show up. Yeah. You had to fucking look for it.
Yeah.
Like you're not on Pornhub, for example, and
right.
You're looking at porn, then all of a sudden that pops up. You have to deliberately search for that
shit. Right.
So.
Oh, man. It's
crazy. But yeah, I've learned from quite a few women that you guys don't have politics.
Well, I'll tell you this. In my opinion, we definitely have politics. And you definitely, I think if you're a short timer, if you have like less than 3 years, you probably don't need to worry about the politics too much. But I was going with the 10-year sentence. I definitely had to learn like, who was who, what was what. You don't smoke in the shower when Miss Shirley's in there. You don't mess with this person's girlfriend. You don't talk to this stud because she has a crazy, you know, ex. You make sure this person's been here 30 years and they're, you know, very respected. And so there are definitely politics, but they're just very different and none of them really have to do with anything that's relevant in real life or matters.
It's more like rules. Yeah,
it's just like – and. I don't know. Like, first of all, same thing. They don't separate you by crimes. In a female prison, it's just separated by housing and custody. Your custody is how you behave your housing is how you behave while you're in the prison. Your custody is what you've done to get in the prison and what you know, how violent you are out there. So those two numbers can be like 1 through 5. The higher the number, the more dangerous you are. So you only have to be housed appropriately with your kind. Like a 1 can't be housed with a 4, with an HO4. But nobody checks paperwork. Nobody. The most I ever saw anybody doing all that time was like, oh, she killed her kid, or she, you know, did this to her child, or the babysitter did whatever, something like that. And then people would go get on the phone, because I did too, and would ask, and I'd be like, hey, read me that. What's it say? And they'd read it to me, and then I'd be like, I'm not talking to her anymore. And then I'd tell all my friends not to talk to her anymore. And then we'd all talk about it. But like nobody's going and beating anyone up as much as they deserve it about charges in a female prison. They'll fight at the drop of a dime about a girlfriend. But that's pretty much it.
On the topic of girlfriends and whatnot, something that's fascinating about men prison that people find interesting is that like men would hustle women from in prison.
Mm-hmm.
And by what I mean, like go on dating apps on contraband cell mm-hmm. phones, or even just work the phones, getting people's numbers and get the girls to send them money.
Right.
Does that work like that from a woman's perspective? Like, are you guys hustling men, and are men actually like infatuated with you guys from the outside, sending you guys money, coming on visits? Is it a hustle in that sense?
So I did this video called Selling Sugar Daddies in Prison. Selling pen pals, because they don't like to be called sugar daddies. They're pen pals, but they're sugar daddies for the record. Let's be real. Yeah, it's a whole business. It's a whole ass business. So in a female prison, so say it's like myself and Sarah, okay? So say I have a sugar daddy, a pen pal. Girls will get put on these sites by their friends, by their family members, by somebody on the outs. And when they get put on this site, you know, they'll write, they'll buy letters, they'll pay people for letters, they'll fish, they'll throw letters, hundreds of letters out there until they get somebody to bite. When they get somebody to bite, they try to, there's like a whole process, there's a grooming process. They never want money, they never want you for anything, but eventually they're going to fall in love with you, you're going to fall in love with them, you're the greatest thing that happened, they're going to, you know, make sure you're connected with their family, they're going to have their mom and their kid calling you so you feel like you're really in there, they're going to make it seem like every day on the phone talking to you is like the only thing that is the most important part of the day and the only reason that they live, they're going to make sure you know that they don't have any financial support, and then all of a sudden, one day they're going to have an emergency. And it's going to be a little one like, hey, oh my God, someone stole my shoes. Can you send me $100? I have to buy some shoes, you know, off the compound. And then you're probably going to do it because you love her and you want to save the day. She doesn't have any other support and she's stroked your ego, love bombed you and sucked you in major. So when that happens, then it's just going to be another emergency. And then it's just going to be like, you know, well, you need things every week. You need hygiene. Everybody needs hygiene. So once all that happens, you're going to get into this cycle. And if you try to break it or get out or that week you can't do it, then eventually they're just going to get really pissed off and they're going to yank that love away. And you're going to be like fiending for it. And you're going to be like, and then you're going to get scared. And you're going to keep on doing it. You're going to find a way to get that shit done. Now, when it's time for the person, for the girl to go home, because that is a good pen pal sugar daddy, because he, you know, he's a good one, then that girl knows she has zero intention of talking to him ever again. So she's going to sell him to Sarah. So say I'm the one going home. So I will tell Sarah, hey, Sarah, I will sell you Bob for $200. So, because I'm about to go home. Like $200 will get me through the next 2 weeks and that's it. I don't need a lot, right? Or whatever. So I'll be like, hey, so what'll happen is I will start talking. Usually it's not like 2 weeks for the record. It's usually like the girl that's going to go home is going to sell her sugar daddy about a month before she goes home. So because you need a little time for this to happen. So she will start saying, oh, hey, babe, Sarah, you know, Sarah did this for me. Oh, Sarah's such a good person. Oh, my gosh, Sarah doesn't have any family. I wish you could meet Sarah. You're just going to love her. When she gets out, you're going to meet her. You're going to love her. You're just going to start really putting Sarah in the game. And then what's going to happen is one day Sarah is going to get your information because she's going to contact you so that when I get out, she can contact you and she can talk to me on the phone because you and I are going to be together out there. So one day, Sarah is going to call and say, hey, I just wanted to call and make sure that this is the number and say, hi, you know, Jen said you were so great and everything. I can't wait till you pick her up so that, you know, you guys can have a great life and get married and ride off into the sunset and just know that I'll be calling you to talk to her. And Bob's like, okay, cool, whatever, whatever. Well, I get out. I never talk to Bob again. I don't see Bob. I don't even tell him the right day I'm getting out so that he can't show up there. Now, what's going to happen is a couple days later, Sarah's going to call and she's going to be like, hey, Bob, you know, can I talk to Jen? And Bob's going to be like, Jen, you know, she goes, she bailed. I don't know what happened. I'm worried. She used me or I'm worried or whatever. And that's when Sarah's going to be like, and she's going to turn on me and she's going to be like, I cannot believe that she did that. You're such a good guy. I can't believe it. And then eventually it's going to be, well, Jen only existed for us to find each other. Like she was the path for us to find each other because we're the true love. And now you just got sold and then you'll get sold to somebody else when Sarah goes home.
Are these men just like fucked up like in the head? Like what, you know, is it for these men? Do they have emotional issues?
When I made that pen pal video on my YouTube, I also did one on my TikTok. I did it because I wanted men to know and I kind of also wanted their feedback. And I got some real good hearty threats from some girls I was in prison with saying, take down the video because you're fucking up people's hustle and da 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 da. And I did not. However, then they tried to go on this little like campaign of like, you won't say why you were in prison, but you will tell other people's business, da da da. I hadn't said anything yet. I had the channel for like 2 months. Anyways, so I will tell you that I tried to put the information out there and kind of just like gauge and feel what it is that these guys see. And because from the inside, from being inside and seeing it from the perspective of the person that's next to the girl, I can see how he would fall for her when she's running all this game, because they're good, probably same way the guys are. You know, they're good. They know how to stroke that ego. But I don't know what initially leads them there. I don't know what it is. And I don't know how they cannot see that this is a game and a setup. And then so when these men write, because I have a lot of comments under that video, they're like, hey, I have this girl, da 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 da. Do you think, hey, I have this situation. Could I like email you and you tell me if you think that she's doing this and that or whatever? Dude, I just ran you down the whole playbook. Like, you should know if all of that happened to you, yes, it's what it is. And actually, you don't even have to tell me. Yes, it's what it is. It's probably what it's it is. Because
so
it's 99% of the time it's what it is. I've never seen not one girl go home to her guy. Not one in the whole time I was there. Ever. So I don't know if they're messed up in the head, Ian. I don't know.
I mean, it's like the whole obsession with like Gypsy Rose, where all the guys are like, right. I mean, the guy that ended up marrying her, you know,
yeah.
Like there's people that do that. Like that just And you're not even, you weren't even like a killer. You didn't do anything to that degree, you know?
I have no idea what it is.
Were you getting like random letters from people that found you on the news?
Yeah, I would get random letters. Mainly like there was like a little portion of time when I was in the newspaper, in the local newspaper. I haven't had any big stories while I was in. Like anyone that's covered my story has been since I've been out. But there was like one little thing in the newspaper where they said, you know, this burglar fed the dog a rotisserie chicken. And we know because the rotisserie chicken little the little tray was on the floor and like the carcass. And so anyways, so from that, they kind of talked about it and it was like on a little couple news stations and it kind of went on. It was like a running joke. So I got some stuff from that, but I wasn't very like high profile to the point that they would have known I was there unless they scrolled a site and saw me. And I wasn't on a site because I was down hard against that pen pal shit. Like I did not like it. I have a son, I have brothers, I have guy friends. I don't know. The using the guy thing for me is just never, I just don't like it.
Well, it goes back to what you were telling us earlier about how you would never mess with a guy if you weren't into him.
Right, right.
So something that's fascinating about your story, which we've never had on the show, is that you had a child in prison.
Yeah. So.
And there's a couple other creators in the content world that had a child in prison and people are just enamored by it. They love it. So tell us about that.
Yeah. So I found out I was pregnant Tuesday. I got arrested Friday. Now, I had been arrested at several points in my life at this time. But that Friday that I got arrested was the Friday that took me to jail and then took me to prison. I was not getting out. I didn't have a bond. I couldn't bond out. I had violated multiple probations at this point. I had racked up multiple burglaries and just a plethora of shit on my plate that was not – there was no way out of it. So I went to jail. I went to the county jail and I sat there my entire pregnancy. And when I got to the county jail, I remember calling my son's father because he had nothing to do with my crimes. He didn't know anything about anything I was doing. He is a good guy. His family's well to do. They're good people. He met me coming out of the rehab that I was in a town where the rehab was, which was not Jacksonville. It was Ocala, where the prison's at. And they told me when I was coming out of the rehab, hey, if you don't do aftercare here, you have to do it for double the time. Instead of 3 months, you have to do it for 6 months in whatever city you're going to, and you have to pay for it and pay for your drug screens. So I said, oh, fuck it. I'm going to stay in this town and whatever. I'm just do it here, and then I'll move here like a year later. I didn't have any kids. I was balls to the wall. There was no reason for me to be tied down anywhere. So I stayed there. So I met him when I was just getting out of there. We dated for less than a year. And basically, I was always careful. I mean, I didn't even get pregnant until I was almost 28. But I got pregnant. And I got pregnant and I was even on birth control. And I called him from the holding cell because he was so excited. He didn't have any kids either. And I remember saying, listen, I don't know what I'm going to get out of this, but I'm not going to drag you down with me. I'm going to go to prison. Hopefully I don't. Hopefully I get house arrest, but I think I'm going to prison. So basically, if you don't want anything to do with me, like I'm cool. It's fine. Like you don't have to go through this with me. I'm pregnant. We are pregnant. But all I want is if you raise this child that my family be allowed to be a part of his life and have him like once a month and so on and so forth. You don't even have to bring him to the prison if you don't want to. But I would be grateful if you did, but you don't have to. And so I just remember giving him this whole spiel and like really meaning it. And he was like, no, I'm gonna ride this out with you. Like, you're the greatest thing that ever happened to me. And because you got to understand, at the time I was like, this is a really nice, good, wholesome, well-to-do guy. I'm on pills. I'm wild. I'm fun. And everything that I fell in love with, the Russian that was so exciting, is probably the same thing that he saw in me. I was exciting to him. I was crazy. Yeah, I was high and I was like, I was wild. You know what I'm saying? I was wild. And that to him came off as spontaneous and exciting and fun, but it wasn't good. But he just never got deep enough to know it wasn't good. So he said he wanted to stick around. So I was like, okay. So, we're not together now, present day, but, he brought our son every single Sunday to that prison to see me.
He stayed with you the whole time?
Until I got out. He didn't, like, stay with me, but, like, he brought our son. And I remember telling him, thank you so much for bringing him every Sunday. Thank you for allowing me to bond with him and for fostering this bond. And he was like, I'm not doing this for you. I'm doing this for him, first of all. And second of all, single moms do this every day. They chase dads down and hunt them down and raise these kids alone and whatever. And no one gives them any accolades or pats on the back. Like, I'm literally just doing what moms do every single day. So it's not that big of a deal. And I was like, touche, okay.
When did your son realize you were in prison?
He was like probably about six when he started wondering why we were all wore the same clothes. Because I was at school up until then. He was like, why is everyone wearing the same clothes? And why can't you come out with me? And why can't you FaceTime me?
That must have been heartbreaking.
Yeah, it was very hard. But his dad handled it. He told him whatever he told him, and it worked, and it was good.
I mean, most mothers are having, like, the Santa Claus talk or the Easter Bunny talk, and there you are having the prison talk. Like, yeah. That's heartbreaking right there.
I think that the only saving grace in our situation was that I wasn't taken from him. He never had me there to miss me or to know what it would have been to have me there. So it wasn't like, obviously, I'm sure one day he'll know he missed out on something. And yeah, because I know I did. But he didn't know that then. I wasn't taken from him. So all he ever knew was coming to see me in this place where he eats these cheeseburgers and these, you know, cheese sticks, and there's games at this table, and there's policemen around, and that's all he knows. So it wasn't anything different for him. But so basically, when I had my son, when I had our son, it was a miracle that I was not in prison yet. I was still in the county. And it was a miracle because in the county, you are presumed innocent until you're found guilty. Mm-hmm. And so you still have certain rights. So had I have had him while I was in prison, I would have had a much different labor and delivery than when I was in jail. And what I mean by that is I was still I was handcuffed and shackled to the bed on and off depending on what was going on. So like when I was pushing, I was handcuffed right here to the bed, but nothing was on my legs. After I had him, I was shackled. During the labor part before I had him, it alternated. But because I was not found guilty yet, I went for a checkup and I was like, it was like a month. I had a month left. I was like 36 weeks at this time. And they were like, you're too small. But I was small anyways. My frame is small. So my belly was just like to right here and I was almost full term, but I was just, you wouldn't even know. So they were like, you're too little. He's too little. And these bastards literally took out a measuring tape, like the ones that tailors measure like your clothes with, and wrapped around my belly. And we're like, you're too little. We have to induce you. And I was tripping because I was like, I don't know anything about, I've never had a kid. I don't know. Like, I know I have 4 weeks left, but this seems like not a good idea to be making him come out right now because we're both small. Like, that's a little discriminatory here. So, but anyways, I didn't have a choice. So because it was considered an emergency situation because I was being induced, they actually called my emergency contact, which was my mom. And then they called his dad because my mom, you know, let him know. So they both knew that I was going to the hospital. Now, they didn't tell them I was going into labor. I was being induced. They said she had an emergency situation. She's in the hospital. But they know I'm pregnant. It's right around my due date. I have 4 weeks left. So they figured I was going into labor. So my mom was like, hey, how do I know, you know, if I can or cannot go see her? And they were like, you have to talk to the watch commander, which is kind of like the major, the warden of the county jail. So they were like, you just did that thing again. I saw it.
Oh, man, well, you're on my ass.
So they were like, so my mom talked to the watch commander and was like, so yeah, can I go see my daughter? Da, 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 whatever. She hasn't been in trouble the whole time she's been there. She's been there over a year. And they were like, yeah. And wait, I hadn't been there over a year because I was 9 months. Well, anyways, whatever. I had been there for a long time. At the end of it, I'd been there like a year and a half. So, so the watch commander was like, yeah, sure. No problem. Go. So, he told her that it was also up to the hospital. It was at their discretion if they wanted to let her in or not, and to the officer that was escorting me. So my mom got there, and my mom is, like, really sweet and innocent. Like, she's like very small and very cute. And she pulled her, like, she had her, because she was not retired then. She's retired now, but she wasn't retired then. She had her physician's coat on, and it said her name, and it said MDPA, and she was like, and then it said neurologist underneath. There's a neurology underneath. And so she was like, hey, my daughter did it. She's not a troublemaker. She doesn't get in trouble. She's been here, did whatever. And then they were like, yeah, sure, we're okay. I think they were extending her like a little professional courtesy. And then they had the officer, they got her opinion. She was like, that's fine. And it was a nice lady named Miss Smith. But yeah, so my mom was able to come in. She didn't make it. Her and Kyle did not make it. That's Dominic's dad, Kyle. They did not make it to the actual delivery. I was there by myself, but they made it like about 45 minutes later and then like 2 hours later. My mom came like 45 minutes after I had him. Kyle came like 2 hours later. And it was so weird because this is the craziest thing. When women have children, they know the doctor in the room. They know they've been to the hospital to walk it. They know these people. I'm literally cocked up, pushing this child out of my body with people I've never seen a day in my life and an officer over my head cheering me on with a mask and scrubs.
Handcuffed.
Well, they know, like, yeah, handcuffed. She was over here. She's cheering me on. I'm like this pushing, handcuffed with a room full of strangers. And I'm like, what if I fart? And that's all I'm thinking. I was so mortified. I don't even know. Like, I am just like, oh, my. It was the craziest scenario ever. And then as soon as he came out, they handed him to me. And then they were like, okay, we have to cut the umbilical cord. And usually, like, the dad does it or, like, whoever you have in the room, like your mom or your sister, whatever. And they're like, so I remember the nurse being like, who's going to cut the umbilical cord? And I was like, and everybody kind of looked at each other and the doctor was like, I can cut it. And I was like, I'll do it. I'll do it. And then so he was like, sure. And I was like, yeah, because usually mom doesn't cut it. I mean, not that I know of, I guess. And so I was like, I'll do it. Yeah, for sure. So I remember I was holding him and I looked at him and I was like, well, just me and you, little guy, you know, and I cut his umbilical cord and I was like, and then, but then it was really sad because, you know, your body mentally, you mentally prepare and your body physically prepares for like this baby to come home and for you to take care of him and like all this stuff. And then you don't, and then you go back to jail. And I just was like in the infirmary for 11 days having a full blown meltdown because.
How long were you able to hold him for?
I stayed there 5 days.
So you're allowed to spend 5 days with him?
Most people, it's 24 hours for a vaginal delivery, 48 hours for a cesarean. But because my mom did some things.
She had the connection.
She, you have to poop before you can be discharged. Like, I don't know exactly what the medical deal is, like why they have to have you have a bowel movement, but you have to poop. And so, and they want to make sure you can get up and walk and that your legs aren't swollen. So I'm not even gonna lie to you, man. I banged my leg up a couple times on the rail and I got some bruises. I said I couldn't walk. I said they were swollen and they were bruising. And if you all of a sudden start having bruises without having been hit, that might be like some kind of blood pooling stuff. So, and I wouldn't poop. So we pulled it out for 5 days, 4 nights, 5 days. We stretched that thing out.
At least you got that extra time.
Got the extra time, was able to breastfeed him for a little bit and just spend some time with him because, you know, I was going up the road. So
did your siblings come and visit at all?
No, I didn't talk to any of my siblings until my first sibling I talked to was like a year after I got out of prison. And the last one that was holding out didn't want to talk to me, just talked to me like a year ago. So between like a year after getting out and, you know, a year ago.
What about your dad? Do you guys talk now?
No.
You guys still don't talk?
Unfortunately, he's, no, he got remarried and the wife has this like, I don't know. I think she has this idea that like I want something and I don't want anything from them. I know he has money and he's well off and he's done a lot of things and he's written a lot of books and like, but he hasn't done anything for me. Prior to that, like you haven't done anything for me for a long time. And I understand like with good reason I was being shit, but I'm not just going to get out and all of a sudden be like, hey, it's time to just like break me off. Be like, no, I wanted to see him, but she made it really difficult. And then she blocked me. So, and then he's like, he's 80. So, he didn't even know I was blocked. And then it just turned into this whole thing. And it was just like,
Does that give you the perspective now that you want to make sure you're always there for your son, no matter what?
Absolutely. I definitely, you know, it's funny because I saw this TikTok. I saw two TikToks, one that was JD DeLay and one that was this other girl, Rachel Elizabeth. And they were talking about, like, what would people do for their kids, like the extremes that they would go to for their kids. And I know JD's was like, to help your child if they were in trouble. And the other one was like, to protect your child. And there's actually parents out there that are like, oh, I would stop here. I wouldn't do anything illegal or whatever. Like, I'm not going to sit down and conspire with you to commit a murder at a table and plot it out. But like, yeah, I'm going to make sure I'm there. I'm going to make sure I help you. And because I know how easy it was, like, in hindsight, I can see where everything snowballed and how all the mistakes just kind of, I can see it all. But in the moment, I was just living day to day, making one decision at a time that was slowly leading me to this, to a prison cell. And because of that, I have a true understanding that, like I said, I really have a true understanding that crime, addiction, all of that does not discriminate. And you can be educated and you can come from a good family and you can be financially very set and it does not matter. You can still end up in that prison on a steel bunk with everybody who didn't have a pot to piss in and was abused, you know?
So out of the 10 years, you do what, nine something?
So in Florida, you have to do 85% of your time. There's no such thing as parole there. Okay. So everybody has to do 85% of your time. You do not get parole to any kind of halfway house, period, point blank. So off of 10, I would have had to do 8.5 at best. However, I got into a little smidget of trouble.
What, you got into a fight?
No, I did get into two fights, but no, it wasn't for that. So, you know, I like money, you know, and I like to have money and I like to, for me to have money and take care of me. So I knew I was going home, you know, soon. And, I had a good little grip saved, but I wanted more and greed will get you every time. Greed will get you every time. Greed will do you in. But okay, so I was a canteen operator, and I didn't even want this damn job. They made me do it. I was a canteen operator three times, and so this was the third time, and they made me do it because there wasn't anybody else that was qualified at that moment, and I was, like, so pissed off about it, and I was like, oh, well, I'm going to make the best of this. So there was this girl that was selling Suboxone on the compound, and she was getting the Suboxone for whatever she was getting it for, and she was selling it for $300 a strip. So she was like, hey, listen, because sometimes you can't roam the compound freely. Sometimes it's locked down. Sometimes the weather. Sometimes they're short staffed. Sometimes there's a fight, whatever. So since I had my store, she was like, I'm going to give you these, whatever, like 10 strips and that people have bought already. Then I'm going to give you my lists of what I want. When they come to the window, they're going to be like, hey, I'm here for the strip. I'm here for this. And you're going to take their tag and scan up what I want, my $100 worth of shit. And when you do that, I'm going to get my 300 and then I'm going to split it with you, 150 and 150. So I was like, okay, hell yeah. Because all I'm doing is my job. I'm basically just doing my job. And so I would split it. And eventually one day, that same individual wanted to rent my bathroom for $200 with her girlfriend for 15 minutes. So I allowed her to. I took my $200 and I let her have the bathroom for 15 minutes. But what happened that day was just like, it was like the craziest freak accident. The major and the colonel were walking around making sure to tell all the canteen operators not to have boxes outside their doors. So when they were coming up, I freaked out and got scared. And because I'm not ballsy anymore like I used to be. So I got freaked out and got scared. I heard and locked my door, turned off the lights, and hid. They know I'm in there because I was just in there like 30 seconds ago. So I'm not hiding for real. I'm just being one of those kids that's like, you can't see me because I can't see you. So basically, they have a key. They have a master key. They're not supposed to come in. They're not supposed to come in the canteen store without one of the canteen company employees being there. But they don't give a shit. They came in. So when they came in, I was on the floor in the dark with a bucket of boiled eggs and I had dropped them and I was picking them up because I was so scared. I was like, I'm sorry. I didn't know you were knocking at the door. Mind you, the door is right here. It's right behind me. The door is canteen is as big as a bathroom, okay? So I'm like, I didn't hear you. And I'm trying to pick up these eggs and I'm shoveling them into a basket and I look ridiculous. She's like, why are you in the dark? You're going to tell me you're in the dark, you didn't hear us, and you're picking up eggs? And I'm like, yes, ma'am. And she's like, something's going on in here. Why is your bathroom light on? And I was like, and there's a fan in the bathroom. So these fuckers are in there getting it on, and they don't hear shit going on out there, nothing. So I'm like, oh, my gosh. Okay, so then she goes to the bathroom. She opens the door. She catches the people in there. I don't know exactly what port. I don't know exactly what part they were in as far as what they were doing. But all I heard her say was get dressed, and they got dressed. Now, I would have just gotten probably like a minor DR, like a 7-day DR or something like that, for having them in my store unauthorized. But they so kindly threw a lighter and some cigarettes in my bathroom when they were getting dressed and coming out, so it wasn't caught on them. And that prompted the boys to come in and search my store, and then they found the Suboxone.
Oh, man.
And it's a narcotic. And it's a Schedule 3, which I didn't know. I was like, no, it's not. It's a freaking medication. It's like a medication for people that are withdrawing. Like,
yeah, you still can't have it.
I know, but I wanted them to charge me with contraband, not possession of a narcotic, which is what they charged me with. Mm-hmm. So instead of contraband, which would have been like a 10-day confinement sentence, they charged me with possession of a narcotic, which was a 67-day sentence, which is what I got 60 days, but I waited in administrative confinement for 7 days. So I spent 67 days in confinement, my first and only time, and I lost gain time, which put me at 9 years, 2 months, and like 2 weeks.
Went
so
out
a little
with a
over
bang.
9 years.
Yeah, went out with a bang.
Jeez Louise.
And you got out 4 years ago.
Yeah, I got out February 14th of 2020, Valentine's Day.
Oh, that's nice.
And,
so it was almost your anniversary a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, a couple weeks
Happy
ago.
Happy anniversary.
Thank you very much.
So what's life like for you now?
You know, I'll tell you what, it's crazy because prison will make you confront yourself. And what I mean by that is like prison will in out here in the world, you have money, you have clothes, you have makeup, you have jewelry, you have cars, you have friend groups, you have restaurants. If you don't like somebody or something, you can fake it until you get home because you're going to go home. There are outlets, there are things, there are ways to wear masks and be a chameleon and get through situations. But in prison, you're in the same hole, same bunk, same clothes, same people, same building, same officers day in and day out for however long you're there. So there's only so long you can go before the real you is going to rise to the surface. And it's crazy because, like, if you're out here and in the free world you smoke, and in prison you really will have the urge to smoke because you're a smoker, you'll all of a sudden see people fishing in a drain with toothpaste on a belt and fishing the tobacco that an officer spit out and then wrapping that in Bible paper and smoking it while he spit in his mouth that has been in the drain, in the sewer drain, because now you're faced with your true self. You're a fiend, you're a smoker, and this is what you have to do. So because you're faced with your true self and what you really are, you have to really find out, what are my morals? What are my values? What are my standards? What am I okay with? Who am I? There's days I'd sit in my bunk and look around and be like, damn, you bitches are really in your element right now. And I am not, but I'm going to make it through this and I'm going to come out okay. You know what I'm saying? And it's not a, I'm better than you, you're better than me thing. It's just, we're just different. You guys are okay right now. I'm not. So when I was getting close to going home, I was like, not only is it because I did a good little stretch of time, but I also had a child while I was in there. And so all of that combined was just like, I don't want to come back ever. And it's not because the food sucks, and it's not because they yell or mistreat you, and it's not any of that. I don't want to come back because my morals and my values and the way I found and confronted myself and realized I was shit and living like trash, I'm not comfortable with that anymore. I'm not comfortable with the things that I was once okay with. So now I'm getting out and I want to be involved and present with things that I'm comfortable with. And so every day now for me looks very different than what it used to, because I am incredibly boring, incredibly calm. I just want to make money. That has not gone away. I want to make money. I want to raise my son comfortably. I want to make sure that whatever he wants to do, I have the means to provide him with that opportunity, whether it's something financial, whether it's something emotional, whether it's something intellectual. I just want to make up for all the lost time because I missed the first tooth, the first word, the first day of school, the first step. I want to be there for everything now because he only has a couple years left of being a kid. So I have a bounce house business with a partner. And it does great because in Florida it does great. And we started that during COVID. It's called Jack's Party Rentals in Jacksonville, Florida, if anybody's there.
Oh, that's so cool.
And yeah, we have 9 really big combo bounce houses with sliders and wet dry combos and just really, really nice stuff. it's not like a little, it's not rinky dink, it's legit.
Like how you thought my studio was going to be.
No, I knew your studio was going to be legit. I knew. I just didn't know it was as legit. This is nice, man. You got a really nice setup. You're doing it. You're doing good stuff. But so I'm doing that. And then I really am trying to pour my energy and love into my YouTube. I know that consistency is key, but I'm hoping to learn from some of the best, i.e. you and a few others.
Oh, man. Behind yes, me? You. Someone yes, behind me? Wow, look at that.
Get some pointers and pick some brains. But yeah, so every day just looks like I enjoy things that I did not used to enjoy before. Because now it's like I would – let me tell you something. This is crazy, Ian, but when I was at the airport, I tried to watch my phone for a second, but I was like this. Because there was a that little thing, the little rolling floor in front of me. Yeah. Right? It was in front of me. And like everybody that was going by, it was like I was mesmerized. I was like, oh yeah, you're a businessman. Oh man, you're a pissed off housewife. You must be a college kid going home. Like, you know, I'm just taking it all in. The things I used to enjoy, I'm no longer comfortable with them. I just want to be successful. I just want to make money and I just want to raise my child. And that's pretty much it. I mean, my days are filled with that.
I love that.
You know, I don't, yeah.
If you could go back to your teenage self before you met the Russian, or maybe even right at that time when life was normal.
Yeah.
What would you say to that girl?
If I could go back, I would definitely say you do not have to find value and worth in a relationship or in another person, because that's what I did. I found my value and my place and my worth in being this girlfriend, in being the one that saved you, in being the one that ran your business, in being the one that was your ride or die, in being the one that knew all your secrets but would never tell anybody. Like everything that I had as far as my identity was attached to you. I didn't know what I liked. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I didn't know what was fun and what wasn't. And it was kind of like, you know, I don't know. I didn't know me. I didn't know who I was at all. So I would definitely say get to know you and get the hell away from the Russian quickly.
No Russians.
No Russians. Yeah, he was murdered last year in a hotel. They called him and it was a setup and they gunned him down. So, but that was that. He did come back in the country. And what ended up happening was I saw him a couple times, but I made sure to steer clear. I saw that he was still involved in the same life. And it actually made me really sad because I was like, damn, over 10 years has gone by and I have changed 360 plus and you are the exact same person, and that is crazy because either way you should have changed in 10 years. In a decade you should have some change, whether you progress or what. I mean, something should have happened and you haven't. You're exactly the same man, and that's insane.
Maybe you needed that eye-opening experience for you.
I did, because had he have gotten murdered without me ever seeing that, I don't know that I would have had the reflection that I have now of him. Because I didn't really ever get closure. You know, he left and fled the country. I went on to do things. There was never any real closure. But because I saw what I saw, it closed that book completely. Yeah. And yeah. So.
Well, Jen, thank you so much for coming on the show today. This was a wonderful conversation with you.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.